it's up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello and welcome to this edition of New Horizons. Vaughan Dennison with you. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke to John Coleman, who had developed and issued a podcast about the life and times of David Blythe. For those of you who weren't able to download the podcast, or just to give you a bit of a sweetener, I thought we'd feature some of that podcast in this week's program. The podcast is called Blindness No Barrier, and it's a 9-episode program, and as I said, it features the life and times of David Blythe. David is no stranger to anyone at BCA. He was a founding member and the inaugural president of Blind Citizens Australia. He served twice, in fact, as president of Blind Citizens Australia, returning in 2007.
David, I was just wondering if we could start with you telling us a little bit about why you've decided to do a memoir, and why you've decided to use podcasting as a format for that memoir.
John, a number of people have asked me to do a book, and I've thought about it and thought, well, I don't know that I really do want to write a book. So I decided that instead of having a written book, I'd do an audio, and in my discussions with you, we came up with the idea of a podcast, and I think that there could be some things that will be a lot of interest to some people, but it might also put into perspective some of the changes that have happened over the last 50 to 60 years that have made a difference to the way that blind people live in Australia today, and some of the opportunities that have been created and a number of opportunities that have been missed.
Can I suggest, David, that as you're coming to the end of your career, that there's a bit of a changing of the guard of the people that were the founders of disability rights, but particularly the rights of blind people in Australia, and that there's a risk that some of that historical knowledge will be lost. Is that also a motivator for you?
Yes, it is. There are several people that can give a recent history, particularly of organisations like the Blind Citizens Australia. But prior to that, there's really nobody left now who can tell that story.
David, I'd like to go back at this point to a time when there wasn't even a David. I thought it might be interesting for people to hear a little bit about the heritage of your family and a little bit about the background of your parents before a squalling young brat arrived, I'm sure very much to their mutual delight.
Yes, well, both my grandmothers were migrants to Australia. My maternal grandmother came from Wales at the age of 17 on her own, and my father's mother came from Scotland. She was a little bit older, but she was also on her own. She met my grandfather, who was also Scottish, when she arrived in Perth. They married, and my father was born in Perth. The family later moved to Adelaide, where he grew up. But on my mother's side, my grandmother went out to a place called Winton in Western Queensland, where she married a man called Robinson, who she had three children with, but he died. And then she married my grandfather, and she had seven children with him.
Seven?
Yep.
Wow.
There wasn't much to do in the Western Queensland. I think there's a little bit of count on.
No, oh, no, that's all right. We'll trust. There was a lot.
It was seven.
She may not have known how many there were.
And my mother was born in Western Queensland. So my father, who at the age of 13 left school, and he went to work for Sir Sidney Kidman from the Kidman Empire. And he eventually moved up into Queensland Well, he went to the First World War, and then after that he moved up into Queensland as a drover working on cattle stations. And he met my mother in Boulia, and they got married in 1933. And I was born in Boulia, Western Queensland, in 1934.
The life of a drover in Queensland at those times, it would have been very basic, very hard.
I'm sure it was, and, you know, the towns were few and far between, so they were working very hard. He was also a fencing contractor. In the country in those days, you had to be able to do everything, because there was nobody else.
So, David, that brings us to Queensland and the point at which you personally enter the story. Now, I understand that you're the first of five children. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your brothers and sisters.
Well, yes, I'm the eldest. I was born in 1934. My brother, Cozzy, he was born in 1936, and my sister, Coral, was born in 1938. Both Cozzy and I were born in Boulia. Coral was born in Winton. My other two, my younger sister, she was born in 1946 in Darwin. And my younger brother was born in 1954 in Darwin.
Now,
so
David,
there's 20 years between us.
Yeah, that's a big gap, and particularly the last one. Does that suggest that the fifth was a bit of a surprise?
I think the last two might have been surprises.
Yes.
As you'll realise, as this story goes on, I was not in Darwin when my youngest brother was born. He was born after I left Darwin.
So perhaps you could give us a little bit of a sense of what they went on to do with their lives?
The elder brother, he worked for the water resources in the Northern Territory. He was one of those people that had to go around and decide where bores and wells could be put down or closed up. Did a lot on Aboriginal settlements. We're putting down what they call kingship bores, so they'd put a bore down and they could get water so the Aboriginal families could live in that area for that period of time. My sister, she travelled a fair bit in her early days, and then she married a chap in Darwin, and they had a business in Darwin and stayed in Darwin. My younger sister, she, similar story, she married a local man, and they had a business together in Katherine in the Northern Territory. And then my youngest brother, he's like my father, he stayed in the transport industry, and even today he still runs road trains, mainly in the Darwin area now. But he has had road trains that have gone right through with Northern Territory, Queensland, South Australia, Western Australia, and he's done a lot in the mining industry with their big transport. So he's the chip off the old block, really.
So are all your siblings still alive?
Yes.
David, you mentioned the small town of Boulia, where you were born. Could you tell us a little bit about where that is what the town of Boulia is like?
Boulia is a very small town in far western Queensland. It's almost on the Northern Territory border, actually. When I was growing up there, it was 98 miles to the nearest railhead. It was a place called Dejara, and I don't think that railhead exists anymore, so it's nearly 200 miles to Mount Isa. To the north, to the east, it was 240 miles to Winton, with the next railhead. They were two-track roads. They were not made roads, so as the ruts got deeper, they just cut another track through the bush by someone going through there, another person followed. So we didn't see much about trains or things like that when I was growing up. I was there till 1942. I went to school for 3 years in a one-teacher school. In the school there were all children. We had Indigenous children as well as the local white children. Race was never a problem to me because I grew up in a mixed-race society. We had a Japanese gardener, and there were other people of different races in that area. After we left Boulia, we went to Townsville in 1942. My father went into the Allied Works Council because the Second World War had started.
David, it's clear from what you're saying that you grew up in an extremely isolated and small environment. Now, whilst that would have been all you knew at the time, do you see that now as a particular or formative experience?
Very much so, because we had to make our own entertainment. There were other children at the same age as I was, but not a lot of us, and we had a river nearby. We could go fishing, we could go swimming, but there wasn't much else to do. We didn't have any constructed sports activities, so we made our own entertainment, and we just worked around the area. We didn't think anything about it because we didn't know any different, and I think in many ways it was a good way to grow up, because I had no one to follow and we had to create our own opportunities.
Would you look back to it now and look back at the things you did it as kids and think that they would be considered as dangerous or risky now, and that you wouldn't be allowed now to be on your own and doing the sorts of things you did?
I have a daughter. I can assure you that she would never allow her children to do what we did.
Yes. David, you also spoke about the school and that it was a single-teacher school. Now, obviously, the classes would have been small. Do you see advantages and disadvantages in being in a small country school?
It's hard to say, because we had a curriculum that we worked under the Queensland State School system. We had certain books we had to do. I try to remember there was probably only one other in my class. There was about 12 children at the school. It might have went up to 15 at one stage, but mostly it was around about 12. And the teacher was really teaching grades maybe 1 to 5. I don't think it went much further than that.
So the teacher had students of different ages and different classes in the same room?
All in the same room, yes.
And so how then do they manage who's doing what?
I think you have to realise that in those days teachers were much more respected than they are now, and we were set a task to do, and we did it. There were some sessions where it would have been a joint session where the teacher might be talking a bit about history or geography or something like that, but most of our subjects we were just given tasks to do and we did them. If we had to do reading, you just read to the whole class when the others continued to do what they were doing, whether they listened to you or not. And it was just one of those things that's how things were. And really, today, it still exists in some parts of the community where we do have these small schools, but of course now they have radio and audio TV. So it's not a lot different, I don't think. It's just that they use different tools.
And that was a short snippet of the podcast series put out by John Coleman about the life and times of David Blyth. I do hope you enjoyed that. And if you'd like to hear more of it, you can go to the Blind Citizens Australia website, www.bca.org.au, and look under the audio page and you'll find it there. Blind Citizens Australia relies heavily on donations from the community, as well as receiving some government funding. If you'd like to support Blind Citizens Australia, have a look at the website and you'll find out how you can do that. Also, if you'd like any information about anything related to blindness or vision impairment, you can get in touch with them directly. Contact 1-800-033-660. 1-800-033-660, or email bca@bca.org.au. I'm sure they'll be happy to talk to you. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks for your company this week. Do take care until next week.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.